In this episode of the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast, Maurice Ross discusses what he believes is crucial to making a coach successful in the game. I'm your host, Lewis Irons, and as always, I'm joined by Greg Patterson from the Scottish FA, and this time we're going through another coaching journey. Well, the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast is back. As always, I'm joined by Greg Patterson, but I'm delighted to welcome former Rangers, Aberdeen, Motherwell, well, the list goes on, Mo, doesn't it? Maurice Ross is here with us today, and I'm really looking forward to this one. Greg, before we speak to Maurice directly here and pick his brain, we're gonna kind of open up and go down a wee slightly different route today on a coaching journey.
Yeah, I think Maurice is exactly keen to do that, isn't he? Talk about his coaching journey rather than going back too long ago without giving Mo's age away about his playing career. So obviously, a good coaching career so far. Worked abroad, worked in the youth game, worked in the senior game, worked in analysis, and knowing Mo from the last couple of years, having just finished the pro licence, then I'm sure there's a lot of good stories and a lot of good lessons we can take from Maurice today.
Definitely. Maurice, thanks for joining us, mate. I've been really looking forward to this. Someone that's played all over, you know, Scotland, England, Norway, Turkey, coaching the Faroes. A man that's got a lot of experience from different cultures as well, which I think is going to be fascinating for the podcast today. But first of all, before we get into all that, how are you keeping? How are things?
I'm good. I'm really quite relaxed. This is me into about my fourth week now without work. But it's funny how you kind of just go on to, I don't know, I just started the whole networking thing, getting in contact with people again, starting to build relationships again. You know, sometimes you can forget about when you're in the midst of a job where you're so focused on what you're doing day to day. So I've basically been doing that. And the missus gave me one of the Fitbits, so I'm programmed to get 10,000 steps in every day. So that's my life.
Just you talking, your first word there, Mo, was you were relaxed. I don't know if it's just, I've had another couple of meetings before this call today, and one of them was, funnily enough, with Sports Scotland about the need to maybe address well-being from a coach's perspective, also coaches' burnout and things. Do you think, is that a thing with burnout and well-being for a coach?
Well, it obviously is a thing, or it wouldn't be getting spoken about, but I think management is a burnout. I don't think coaching is a burnout, in my opinion. I think managers go through, they take so much on their own shoulders, and the managers I've been involved with. And I think maybe that is why I'm tending to focus just on coaching rather than worrying about being a manager. I think I've naturally, I could be a manager, natural traits, but it's not something I'm going to get hung up on. I just want to focus on my craft and being as good a coach as I can. But I do see it in Steve Robinson sometimes when he gets so uptight about scenarios, and it's my job to kind of just remind him that you kind of control the weather. And that's kind of a basic statement, maybe a throwaway statement, but you can only focus on what you can control. And even at that, good managers still cannot control 11 individuals. You try to, but if you look at it, it's very difficult to. And that's the beauty in trying to make the difference to footballers day to day.
No, very much so. That's you wouldn't have sport then. You wouldn't have sport if there wasn't that unknown as soon as the players cross the white line. You know, you can't control the result. You can control to the best of your ability what they do. But as you say, as soon as they cross that white line, then, you know, your human error and opposition and, as you say, even weather. Weather is, you know, different.
The permutations on a football match are into hundreds of millions. I mean, you've got 22 different minds. You've got referees thrown into that. You've got weather conditions. You've got family lives on the back of each of these individuals. You've got, the ball can skid off somebody's head and it can change a whole career for someone. You know, it's crazy. It's just trying to nullify and mitigate mistakes as much as you can, and give people best practice or best case scenarios that you can repeat on a daily basis, like individually, unit work, obviously that combines into full every 11 stuff. So no, it's listen, if it was easy and if it was everybody can do it, then it wouldn't be fun and I would be bored of it already. So that's why we're here.
What are the things that you focus in on, Mo, as a coach, that you working with, I know obviously your time with the Motherwell youth players, but obviously working with first team as well there, those key things that transcend maybe the age groups that you can really focus in on with a player?
It's one of these ones where I think I'm really big on, you know, every industry in the world, there's theory before there's practice. Where I think times at football, it can be go and play and then we'll consider all that stuff later on. It's got to be, if you can teach somebody the basics of something, a certain movement, a certain understanding of a formation, and then they understand that, they've got more chance of having success at that. And I'm telling you, you know what it's like? Human beings, they want to be successful at stuff. So if you can show them the best way to do something and have success at it, you've got half a chance. To just coach and coach and coach and coach and coach, for me, doesn't work. There's got to be a certain ownership. So Frank Dick on the pro license just talked about handing the baton over. And I thought, God, that's really great. That. And it's so simple, but it's great. And I think there's got to be a handover at some point where you've given them, these players, so many scenarios that fit his position in relation to a certain formation or whatever, that when I stop the session or when I'm ghost coaching or whatever, I'm asking, what do you see there? Why did you play that? And players always think it's a negative, they've done something wrong, always. But it's about them knowing what good looks like, recognising that was good. And when you tell them, when they tell you, that was good because X, Y, and Z, it sticks. It always sticks. I'm massive on enough. I'm probably boring people that's ever listened to me on any podcast. I'm boring to the point that if everything you do in life requires thought, apart from blinking, obviously breathing and whatnot. But it's about harnessing their thoughts, catching negative thoughts, catching what made a movement good, understanding what made it good, reinforcing it to the player. So for me, it's thought process, chain of thought, how you think, what you think, catching negative thoughts, catching poor thoughts, disregarding them. And it's about, it's just about honing that skill of being understanding how to think, how to train your mind to think, how to train. Mourinho talks about it all the time, know how to train. And I want, my big thing is, know how to think, because then you've got a chance. It's up to me to put the good scenarios into the player, but they, once they get these scenarios in, they've got to be looking for wee indicators. Oh, that happens, that must happen. Corresponding moves, oh, that needs to happen. But it's all in the brain. It's not your feet that play football, it's your mind that plays football for you.
Yeah. Is that something, Morris, that you always thought like as a player, or was that something that you've learned and honed in on as a coach? Is that something that can come naturally to some that maybe doesn't to others?
I use this analogy. When you lose your sight, your hearing becomes better. So for me, as a young player growing up, coming into an environment that was just filled with talented players, I'm like, oh, I'm not this level. So I've then had to hone other skills, listening to coaches. Fitness, be fit as anything, but understand your position, ask questions. I was really curious as a kid. My mum used to get him called into school all the time. He's a nightmare to teach because he's always asking why. Yeah, but why? And that's been me all my life. It's like when you see slow midfielders, for instance, they're clever. They cut angles because they've had to harness that side of the game because they've not been quick. So they're in the wrong position to get caught out. So again, that's good. Taking away physical attributes, going back to the mind again. He needs to think, how can I cut that angle? Where's my starting position? When do I detach to go and press? And it's all in your head. And it's something that I will never deviate from in terms of my coaching.
Yeah. Is part of that, that intrigue that you're talking about there, Morris, where you're constantly asking why, is that probably been a big part? Because I'm looking at you through your career and where you've played. Have you always had an interest in learning more and maybe learning different cultures? Because I'm sure nowadays, when you look at the modern game with players from all over the world, that broadening that horizon must be something that can only help a coach as well.
I think it helps me as an individual. I think when I went to Norway and I started to, I mean, if I got a pound for every time I say, oh, it's just so different here, and it's not like back home, and it's not, oh, that's different in them. And then just one day I went, of course it's different, because that's different. and so it opened my mind to say, do you know what? Let's give this a chance. And I ended up, I mean, I've got two beautiful daughters over in Norway. It was a great move for me but again, I think that comes with maturity. So it's probably in line with being 28. Of course, you're more mature. And then I think that then just kind of kicked on from there. But listen, I think in any walk of life, if you're curious, you've got a chance of being good at it. How does that work? How does that work? How can I be better at that? I think if you've got that outlook on life, I think you've got a chance of being successful. Even if you're not skilled, if you've got an interest in what makes things happen and how to better yourself, then you've got a chance.
I'm getting the feeling here, Greg, Morris talks about, you know, the teachers maybe finding that a bit of a nightmare when he's asking why. Must be a bit of a dream on something like the pro license when it's such a collaborative thing, when you need to have that attitude to doing something like coaching.
I can remember Morris on the A license. I can go further back than the pro. And I can remember him on the A license doing exactly that, or kind of making faces and screwing his face up a little bit when, you know, guest lecturers and guest speakers were chatting to the group. And I remember, you know, maybe sitting at the front and seeing Morris's reaction, because he's right, it's that inquisitive nature. But what Morris has spent the last 5 minutes or so chatting about is, I wish I could bottle it, because in essence, I think what he's described very well is what we coin in coach education and what UEFA have got a big push on just now, and that's reality-based coach education. So I think if you were to rewind coach education probably to when Morris did his A-licence, it was, you know, pick out a hat, something to go and coach. So, okay, I'll go and coach midfield support. But Morris is right, it's, why is he coaching midfield support? Why, you know, let's take it back to the game. What happened in the game? What happened in the game that, you know, you're then coming to the tutor or going to the players or going to the head coach or whoever it is to say, do you know what, we need to work on midfield support on Wednesday night in training because X, Y, and Z happened during the game. There's a reason for it and there's a need for it during that learning cycle for the players. It's ultimately going to make them better. So I think it's a big shift in coach education, is this reality-based learning. But it's, as I say, I think Mo's summed it up very well alongside the, you know, the critical thought's an important one as well. And it's one we push, or I'm trying to push a lot just now in coach education, you know, rather than just listening to Steve Salas or Donald McNaughton or any of these other guys we might bring in as guest lecturers and just saying, oh, Steve Salas was great. Now, of course, Steve Salas was great, but why was he great? What can you then implement? What can you then do? How can you take that away and implement it at your club? So, yeah, reality-based learning and critical thought, I think that's what exactly what most chatted through, as I say, in the last 5 minutes or so.
Yeah. Do you see more and more of that, Morris, in terms of that reality-based coaching? Is it something you're pretty big on when you're implementing in coach?
I think I like the reality-based training from a sense of, you need opponents, of course, to bed in the movements and the fundamentals. So of a unit, again, that unit is only, so it's midfield unit. If you work in midfield as an isolation, it's no real. So you need a delivery from a centre back and you need a forward pass. So as much as you're doing unit work, you're focusing your details on unit work, you're still needing that delivery in and you're still needing that out ball for a forward to make it real. Then you need to throw in to the mix, you maybe need an opponent, but it's balancing it for, you want repetition, you want the players to feel good about it, to see it working. So it's about, I think it's reverse engineering it. You've got, here's what I want to get, now I need to take it back and coach incrementally. So you instead of saying, okay, we'll go 3v3 in there, have one in there. Mm-hmm. And they've got to, the guy in the ball then has got to find the other two spare players via rotation or whatever. Then you put two in. And then you put, you know, it's about coaching it, smelling it in the moment. The players have got to get something out of it. Enjoyable as well. But for me, I get enjoyment and players get enjoyment when they do things right. No playing five-a-sides. Yes, there's a time for it. Players want to get better. Players want to stop earning £1,500 and go and get 15 grand a week, 100 grand a week. That's what they want. And the only way of getting there is by educating them in the position, because they've all got a good touch. They've all got decent touches. They've all got decent pace. They've all got decent height. They've all got decent physicality. It's the ones that think that are the better football players. And that's where I come in. You've got to think. You've got to put visuals on the training pitch. You've got to have theory on the training pitch. You've got to have practical on the training pitch. And it's about marrying them all together so it's an enjoyable session. And they go away thinking, that coach cares about me. He cares about my education. And if I can make Alan Campbell a better player, it makes me a better coach. Make Motherwell a better chance of winning a game. Great. We'll win.
Exactly.
That's how we put it.
Yeah. No, it's a fascinating way of looking at it, because I'm sure a lot of coaches out there would look more at physical in terms of the if they recruit players due to their pace, their height, whatever it may be. But ultimately, you're dealing with people at the end of the day. And if you can make that person a better footballer, that's probably going to benefit you in the longer run, Greg, when you can't really just fully rely on physical traits at all times.
I always go back to watching BBC Sports Personality of the Year years ago when Wenger was there. I think I've spoken about this before. I'm probably boring people now on this podcast, but I always remember Wenger. It was the Arsenal Invincible year, whenever that would have been. I don't know how many years ago, 10 years, 12 years ago, whatever it was. And I always remember Gary Lineker. Arsenal won Team of the Year because it went invincible, I think. And Gary Lineker turned to Wenger and he said something like, Arsene, you've worked with some fantastic footballers this year. And he said, no, I haven't. I've worked with fantastic athletes who are lucky enough to be good at football. So I think that's probably a little bit of what Mo's alluding to as well. You know, he's lucky enough to work with these players, you know, they might have been chosen because of their physicality. They might have been chosen for other reasons. But he's then talking about trying to make them the very best they can be within the parameters of, I suppose, what the gaffer's wanting to do. Mm-hmm. And most tweaking them and try to prod them and cajole them to be the very best.
Right. So on that note, very rarely will you make a player faster. Mm. Very, very. And by the way, if it is, you're talking 0.1 second over a 20-yard sprint. So for me, when he's saying he's coaching athletes, yeah, they probably are athletes. But if you go to the top level, everybody's 2 inches taller, 5 kilos heavier, can run that 100 metres that second quicker. That's that. I kind of coach that. I kind of get them figure stronger, whatever. But I can coach their thought process. I can coach their, can you identify this scenario real time? Again and again and again, last minute when you're tired. You know, can you still get the principles of what we're trying to do? And I mean, if you're talking about athletes now, why are you a better player at 32 than you are at 21, where you're a machine, you could run like the wind, and 32, you've picked up your injuries, you're starting to get a wee bit slower, but why are you a better player? Same person, you've got less attributes in terms of physical output, but you're a better player. Why?
It's
in here. So you've saw all these scenarios, all your life, it's experience, you've been educated, hopefully, by some decent coaches, because you know, it's not always the case. So why are we wasting the 11 years for 21 to 32 on, we'll just go and play 11 aside, 5 aside now? We're wasting time. The quicker you can educate footballers, and I'm talking, I think 14. Any younger than that for me, I'm not so sure. About 14, 15, 16, start to pump these guys full of game-related scenarios and don't stick to one formation as coaches, youth coaches. Three blocks of 3 months. If you're going to train for 9 months a year, have 3 blocks, 3-5-2, 4-4-2, 4-3-3, and give the players different scenarios. Even players that I've come across, I don't know, I play a 4-3-3 wide. Well, you played in a 4-4-2, didn't you? Aye. Well, it's only similar small tweaks. I think if we can focus on the mind and the thought process that go into footballers, I think they'll become definitely better footballers.
Do you see enough of that, in your opinion, Mo, in the game? that focus on the mind?
I see a lot of reactive coaching. Keep the ball. Win your header. I hear it every week in the Premier League in Scotland. And I'm like, we must be better than this. Players don't mean to take a bad touch. Can you identify why you took a bad touch? Okay, it was a bubble. Fine. Was it because he ran towards the ball too quick? There's a coaching point. Stand still when you receive it. Come off the game at the 90 degrees to where the ball's coming from. Go away from it. I mean, the amount of players I see running towards the ball, even at Premier League level in England, it's astonishing. All the best players. For me, when I think of players running towards the ball, for me, that's got to be, that's a defensive strategy. Never when you're in possession. For me, should you be running towards the ball? You can angle towards it slightly, but you shouldn't be running towards it. And I see it all the time. I see big centre-backs asking midfielders to run to them, pass it 2 yards, they turn and they pass it to their centre-back. It drives me nuts. So I think that the minute you can get half-turned and play forward, or doesn't need to be forward, it can be switch a player or whatever, you've got to hit people moving away from you. Because the same technique for a 3 yard pass in a straight line to an opponent or to a teammate, the ball will go in the same direction if it's 12 yards. It's the same technique, it's the same angle, but it's going to go 12 yards to the 3 yards. So what you've got to trust that that ball is going to come to you. Every Scottish footballer can pass a ball 12 yards, 20 yards. Yep. But there's a point where I then say, well, I don't want 50 yard passes, because 50 yard passes separate your team. They don't connect your team. So I think if you can find that balance between the 8 to 15 yard passes and you move in sync with everything. Because if you pass shorter, you're in close proximity that if he takes a bad touch, the guy that passes him can go and influence it. So there's all these wee intricacies that maybe I'm going a bit over the top on this, but it's kind of how I think, how I feel. It's how I try to work every day.
Yeah. Well, like you say, maybe focusing on one particular point, but it's given us, Greg, a glimpse at that intensity that I think we've spoke about right at the start of this, that fine-tuning things, that passion as well, that Morris is probably always and always will have for the game. And it's these fine margins that can influence and make a coach.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I know a club obviously close to Morris's heart and Rangers, and I think Michael Beale's getting a lot of plaudits and rightly so, because I think in knowing Michael quite well, I think Michael thinks about the game as deeply Morris thinks about it, and it's probably back to, you know, burnout. You know, he probably doesn't feel burnout as a coach because he's so passionate about it. So yeah, you're right. It's almost like fine tuning a car. I would draw that analogy at times. It's like in a car, and those little bits of intricacies that go into it. You know, Morris has talked through an example there of maybe a holding midfield player who's just able to step off the game rather than going towards the game to then maybe play roundabout crowded areas. But I'm back to that fine tuning the car. You need the other midfielders to be in sync with that. You need the players to have a good understanding round about them. So, you know, what's the game model for the team? What way they set up to play? You know, and that's a lot of hard work. And I think that's back to what Morris said earlier as well. You know, he talked about working 3 month blocks sometimes. I think sometimes as coaches, we can be guilty of maybe trying a practice, trying a game related practice, trying a formation. Do you know what? It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Therefore, I'm not going to bother with that again. But just because it doesn't work in that one session doesn't mean to say we can't go back to it. We can't revisit it as a coach and have that critical thought that I spoke about earlier and say, do you know what? That and that and that was good about it. Those three things were good about it, but those three things weren't so good. So let's go back and revisit it. And sometimes it takes that revisiting to drop and for everything to then start working in sync. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day. You know, I love an analogy. Rome wasn't, you know, one session's not going to solve all your problems. So sometimes it is good to go back and revisit things, I think. And as I say, fine-tune is probably the best way I would describe what Mo's maybe just chatted through.
I mean, I think it boils down to humility as well. You're trying to put on a good session. Maybe it needs tweaked fine-tune, but you kind of can it. If you're going to can an ideology or a process after a game, or a training session, you've no chance. You've got to take what was good.
Pardon? want to talk about another Scot. I don't know if you've heard, and hopefully the listeners can dig this out, but it was Russell Martin.
Brilliant.
Russell Martin, if you heard his interview the other night after, he got beat 3-0, and then he's getting questioned on a plan B, and he said, but plan B is just shoving a big guy up front. He says, that's not what football's about. That's not what it should be about. We need to become better at working out how to play in plan A. Yeah. But he needs time to do that. He doesn't, as Morris says, he's humble about it. He doesn't just throw the baby out of the bathwater and say, that's it, let's go to plan B because of one defeat.
That comes from a very measured, clever man who knows his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he's brave enough, and I'm saying brave enough, to believe in what he believes in, and he's not going to change for anybody. Now, I'm not saying he'll not tweak. He will tweak because he's clever. But Brendan Rodgers doesn't change his style. The media up in Scotland were telling Brendan, oh, you're playing the same way all the time. Look at Brendan Rodgers, best coach we've got in Britain. Guardiola doesn't change. Klopp doesn't change. Pochettino didn't change. So if you believe in something and somebody doesn't believe in your thing, well, that's tough on them. Tough. I believe in it. And it's encouraging the players to keep taking that ball at the right angle, at the right time. That's where the beauty of giving players freedom within the parameters to go and express themselves. Now, I'm not talking about doing crossing on the 6-yard line. I'm not talking about that. But if you believe in it, you've got to own it and keep going on it. Because if you change, then what? Players, we're just going to rip that up. Players start doubting you. And when you get 25 highly paid, testosterone-filled men and you change, he's unsure of yourself. Problems. So there's a bit of that as well. So no, I was so impressed with, listen, I've been impressed with Russell since the day I met him. He's going on to bring things up, boy.
It fascinates me as well that the plan B thing that people throw as a criticism at coaches does my head in the sense that surely any coach would get slaughtered if they were sitting there coaching their team to play two different ways throughout the week instead of focusing on one way and making that the very best way. Could you imagine the amount of time you would need with your team to actually coach them to play two very different ways? Surely that's never going to succeed, is it?
And that's Russell's point. We need to come better at plan A. So yeah. I can't remember who it was playing. I think it was at Wigan who was maybe playing, or Hull. They decided just to go man for man to try and stop them playing out. And the players maybe, so after 8 wins, I think, did they say they get 8 wins in 10 games or something like that? And it was the first time they encountered another team doing that because maybe they've watched eight of those wins. So they've realised how to work it out. But his players, his argument now is his players now need to become better at that. So if another team now go man to man, okay, how are we going to do it? How are we going to work it out rather than just let's lump the ball forward? Let's not do that and stick with, as you say, Lewis, become better at what we've done, Greg,
it fascinates me that like lumping it up guarantees you to win. How does that guarantee you to win? You've got to look at football the way I kind of look at poker. Anybody can beat me in a game of poker with one card. But if I play and my strategy is better than his, I will win more games in this game. Yeah. And that's the same with football. If Russell is having more possession, more shots, more corners than his opponent, he will win more matches than he will lose. And that is what we've got to understand and have the bravery to stick to your guns and don't be... At the end of the day, you're in a job because you're the expert. The ones on the outside, they're not the experts. So you've got to trust yourself, you've got to back yourself. So...
No, it's fascinating. It is because, listen, obviously in my line of work, it is media related stuff. And listen, that's part of the job of a manager nowadays as well, is how you handle the criticism and the media that comes with it. But like you said, with Russell, the way he addressed it was fascinating. But right now as well, Morris, I guess you'll see that with managers you've worked with players you've worked with, I'm sure, throughout your career, that the way that they handle themselves and maybe just have to block out that outside criticism at times is key to try and keep that unity within the club and within the squad.
There's nothing sacred anymore. I mean, the outside world's in your living room now. That's it in a nutshell. because all these social media platforms. It's great if you're building a profile. It's not so great if you're trying to kind of keep yourself below the parapet. No, but there's part and parcel. Listen, managers are paid well. They know what they're getting themselves into. And listen, we all love it. It's the drug that we love. We love that to be doubted. You doubt me, I'll show you. You know, that's in your makeup. That's in your DNA. And if it's not in your DNA, then you'll be short-lived.
You're in the wrong job. Mm-hmm. it's fascinating. I'm keen to know as well, Mo, for obviously we're getting you at a time on this podcast where you've just recently left Motherwell, and obviously you're at a crossroads probably as well in that regard for your future. That's keen to pick your brains about what your kind of next steps are and your future hopes for within the game as well. And what are those next steps for you, mate? What are you looking at the moment?
My next step, I don't see myself going out alone. I think I will be as part of a bigger what's the best way to put it? Yeah, I'll be going with another manager. So it's I think I've got time for the management stuff. I'm just going to focus on the coaching. Just honing my craft. I mean, when I look at sessions I did a year ago, I think, that wasn't great, actually. When I'm looking back, but at the time you think, oh, this is good, it's pertinent, it's a good point. So your mind evolves all the time. It's about just reducing that sauce, keep reducing it, and it's just that quality bit at the end that we're looking for. You know, that process is still 10 years away. I'm still going through this process of becoming better and better. But it's one that I love. I love the journey I'm on. I love the process of it all. I think what I've started to do better in the last maybe year or so is start to network better. Grant at Motherwell's been giving me media training, so hopefully that's going to help me. But you know, I'm so relaxed. I'm so calm. I feel like I'm on this journey now, and I'm just going to get blown into a position. That's what I feel. I don't feel I'm stressed. Oh, I need to get a job. I need to do this. Now, I'm not financially secure, and I'm still saying that. So I feel like I'm on the right track.
Absolutely. I guess it's all about mindset and mentality, Greg, for a coach, no matter what point, because the best coaches in the world and the worst coaches in the world all have points where things are going great and things aren't going great. And it's about having to keep that mindset throughout. And that's huge for a coach, particularly in an industry like football, which is a roller coaster at times.
No, I just think it's a great message from you, that patience, Mo, if I'm being honest, because it's just so important in football. And I look at my mates through school and, you know, top of the tree as quantity surveyors and architects and goodness knows what else, the guys I went to school with. And you know, football's a slow burner. The football industry is a slow burner. And I think that's where the impatience comes from. You know, we get phone calls, emails all the time. I need to get the B license out of the way. You pardon me? You what? I need to get the B license out of the way so I can go on the A. And I want to go on the pro now. Don't get me wrong, it's great to have ambition. It's great to have an end vision and a goal. But it's really, as Mo spoke very well about there, it's great. You need to hone your craft. You need to get good at it. I think the coaching, and Mo maybe come in here as well, the role of the coach has evolved over the years. It's more multifaceted now. You know, it's no longer just, I don't think it's any longer just the coach and the manager. You know, there's a lot more to it. You know, and I think that's important, you know, what's your expertise? What can you be the very, very best at? It might be the very, very best video analyst. It might be the very, very best goalkeeping coach. There's just so many different roles now within the game, you know, as the game grows and evolves, that, you know, I think people have been maybe looked at the AVBs of the world and the Mourinhos of the world and just thought, I can be one of them, but they're outliers, they're freaks, almost in a nice way. So, you know, as Mo spoke about better than I have, you know, honing that craft is just so key, I think.
Yeah, and I think, see, if you do a session, and again, it comes back to curiosity, you should be curious how your training session was received by the players. Now, you may think the session went well, but if you actually quizzed in it, how was that? Was it good? How was it in terms of physical output? So again, it comes back to curiosity, having that humility to ask, was that any good? And having that relationship with players that they feel free to say, do you know what, I was piped there, that was too much. or do you know what, that wasn't enough. Can we maybe, you know, and have, so again, that comes back to environment. You've got to create, and I bet you Russell Martin's got this down at Wenke Dons. I bet you all these players have got a voice. A voice, no, to be, why are we doing this? No, that type of voice, but if we can do extra, can we maybe cut back on that amount? I bet you. I just know the guy, and it's so important in the environment you create that, listen, you do get players. I mean, Tony Watt will mind me saying this, or Sod. I mean, Sod's another one. You're just explaining your drill, and they're like, what would then? Oh, well, if you let me explain, you know, these types of stupid questions. I'm not talking about these types. But no, I do think it'd be curious, have humility to question, was that good? And allow your players to give you feedback. And I think when you do that, it becomes that you all own it rather than just a kind of autocratic approach to it. You know, just bang, 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 you listen to me. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't work. Because they're these kids are not being brought up like that now.
Tony started the B license with us this week as well, and he's texting me late last night. I'm loving it. And I said to him, you're texting me as if it's nice, and do you know what I am? I'm surprised I'm enjoying it so much because I realise, you know, he spent all day yesterday in, I don't know what he was in, psychology or periodization or something like that. Just, you know, and it's probably just completely alien to Tony, but it's you know, I feel as if Tony's been around forever. He's only, what, 26, 27 or something, Tony, mm-hmm. I think. You know, he's starting at the right time. He's starting at the right time. You know, a lot of them leave it too late, I think.
I mean, we've, the last, what, 18 months, I've been bombarding Tony with information. Subtle. Don't know, in the group, Tony's a boy that needs it kind of to the side a wee bit. But he certainly asks enough questions. hopefully, these questions become more pertinent and more detailed and more... Yeah, to the point. But again, he's interested. He's a very good footballer. I think there's still more to come for Tony as well. Declan Gallagher's another one, I think, has joined, is he? B license.
That's right. He's on a B as well, yeah.
But you know what? It's so typical. I had Peter Hartley on the phone yesterday asking me to help him with his A license stuff. And of course, I guided him. But as much as you want to help people, you've got to say, but this is you. Yeah. You've got to go and scratch around and make mistakes and play about with stuff that find out why my God, my distances are terrible. And it's you that's molding your wee life, how you do it. You can ask me a question, what 4-3-3, how does that work against 4-4-2? Then I can give you that. But you then got to go and take that, boil it down, yourself. And then you've got to then articulate that to your players in a form of a session. So yeah. As much as you want to help, you've actually got to be cruel to be kind to say, well, here's the detail of it. You need to put it into your voice, your words, your way of coaching, because that's the only way you get better.
Yeah. That is a fascinating point because I won't name any names, but you do see it a lot with guys that are trying to maybe progress through the coaches and the badges, and it is that mentality of just get it done, just get through it. They just see it as probably a tick box exercise, for want of a better phrase.
Yeah.
And that's an unhealthy way to look at it if you are ultimately trying to progress as a coach, because it's not going to last you long having a mentality like that, is it, Mo?
There's no quick fix to anything in life. Nothing. Unless you win a lottery, that's it. So again, that comes back to how you're thinking. It's an immature thought process, if you ask me. But again, that's the way you're thinking, that's the way you'll go. So it's not for everybody. I mean, I think many people like the idea of being a coach and being a manager, and they see Sky Sports and they're telling them, man, I'm going to be that, but they don't put the hours in. They don't coach under 14s. I'm not doing that. It's under 14s. Absolutely, you should do it. Go and do it. You're lucky you've got a team to coach. Yeah. You know, that should be your approach. I mean, I went into the fourth division in Norway. I mean, I had four players when I took the job. But I knew this is what I need to go through. And I changed my formation every year, again, to get that. I needed to understand 3-5-2, 4-3-3, 4-4-2. I had to understand it and what works against it, what doesn't work against it, you know. And I just think if you've got to really immerse yourself in it. This is not something you just do once a week. This is something when you're on the back of a bus going to a game, you're thinking about. It's got to be It's basically a goose eye. It's going to envelop you.
Yeah.
That's probably the thing, isn't it? There's probably more people that want to win the lottery than earn it. Let's be honest. That's probably the analogy we're looking at here. And that's ultimately probably why you see maybe it's not for everyone, like Mo says.
No, it's not. And I think society's obviously changed as well. You know, we've got the millennials now, the kind of age of the quick fix, you know, Google. You know, certainly Mo and I never had Google when we were growing up. I know you might have, Lewis, but, you know, everything's quick now, everything's instantaneous, and that's just not the case. I've spoken about this already. It's just not the case. It, you know, another analogy, like Oasis didn't play at Glastonbury, did they? They started off in little boozers and honing their craft, getting to know who was going faster than who, and everything. Mo's just so right. Just so right. It's just things take time, and you've got to just plug away at it. And it's so, so important that you make mistakes and learn from them, reflect on them, and then kick on. So even, I've used the phrase before, slow burner.
Yeah. Even one of the little things you said there, Mo, when you were talking about Tony Watt and you were maybe giving him information, and you just put it in subtly that he's the sort of boy that needs it delivered to him at the side. Knowing your players, knowing their personalities, is that something that
has
changed a lot in your time, in terms of, was that big when you were playing, or is that really just developing more and more now, would you say?
It's more and more now. Of course, society's changed. The game's less industrial now. The language that needs to be used, the approach that needs to be, you know, the approach to it. But yeah, listen, something that I've taken for the pro license, the emotional intelligence part of football is massive. Massive. If you kind of walk in a room and smell it, you're in trouble. And, you know, sometimes in football, there's managers that just don't smell the room. And if you don't smell the room, your message is going to be lost straight away. And that comes from the emotional intelligence, no IQ. But talking like, to get to a kind of coaching point, like to be Tony, I mean, to get back to the whole thought process again, the amount of times you see it, and you'll see it in football, you just watch football every weekend, and a ball comes into a striker, it gets played wide, and it's 30, 40 yards out, and it's like a counter scenario, for instance. You will see strikers sprinting to get into the box. But what's the defender doing? He's also sprinting to get into the box. So how are you going to create space on a guy that's got 2 yards on you and you're the same speed as him, for instance? For you to create space, you need to slow down. Well, because he's programmed to get into that 6 yard box area, front post. Slow down, slow your run. But that's nothing to do with technique, finishing, anything. It's evaluating. If I slow down, he's going to create the space for you. Now, it sounds back to front, but that's exactly what it is. You as a striker want to have space in the box. Defender should want to close space. But you watch on Saturday, there'll be a goal on sports scene, the ball get played wide, there'll be a cross across, and the centre-back will run into the six-yard box and there'll be a cutback finish. Guarantee it. Happens every week. But this again comes back to the finish and the execution is Tony's technique. I kind of coach that. But if I can tell him, slow up in the box. All these wee things that they're all, again, boiled down to coaching in the mind. I think.
Yeah, it's huge. And right at the start of this, Greg, I said to you that we're not going to go through play by play and look over Morris's career, go through, you know, his good playing days and what he's learned. I wanted to get a feel for him as a coach. And we're hearing things here that are refreshing and eye-opening in terms of Morris's character and coaching credentials, I guess. But it's also things that when you boil it down, it just makes sense to me anyway. When I listen to it, it feels like it makes sense to me, then it should be applicable for most coaches, but everybody's individual.
No, applicable, it is. It's applicable. I think we've covered it already. It is applicable for everybody, but Morris is right. It comes from experience. It comes from being on the grass and being able to give that information. Now, he spoke about an example there. The example won't work. And he's right, it will happen this weekend, but it won't happen. You know, he's got to, can you spot that point in time when it does happen and give the information at the appropriate time? and you recall the information at appropriate times. A lot of times you speak to players, do you remember that point in time when you were running with a centre half back towards a goal? Yeah, they don't. They're telling you to do it because they don't want to admit they don't. So it's being able to paint those pictures at the appropriate points in time. So I'm back to that reality-based. Did you know where he... I remember starting my B licence of 19-year-old down in Largs and Jim Fleeton asking me, Greg, the fullback was too high, do you remember? Oh, aye, Jim, I remember. I didn't have a clue. Didn't have a clue because I was so caught up in the moment. So it's back to more experience, I think. So, you know, your word applicable there, it is applicable, but it's got to come from experience.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's I get when you spoke about like evaluating scenarios more in terms of trying to get a player to that point where he can, he or she can do that on the pitch, it's like it's not going to come overnight like coaching. So I guess one of the other things with coaching, it's not just about mindset, but it's patience as well, and it's persistence and believing in what you're doing. And it kind of encapsulates everything we've just spoke about really in a nutshell, and we could keep talking, but there's so many elements to it that are fascinating, but all of it does take time, I would have to say.
Yeah, and I come back to the word humility again. If you're coaching a boy who's humble and curious, you've got a chance of getting in there. You've got a chance of making a difference to this boy. There's boys that don't want to be coached. And it's not because they can't take it in. They're not interested. They think they are. They like the thought of being a football player. That's what I'm telling you. The boys in the dressing room that I've been in the last 2 years, I can see the ones that'll fly. And then you've got the mavericks. So I'm not talking to mavericks when I'm talking about coaching, because you don't get many mavericks. I'm coaching to the masses. So when I used to coach David Turnbull, his body language would sometimes show me as if, listen, just give me the ball. And I love that. However, when he goes from Celtic to Everton, there'll be 10 David Turnbulls down there that are quicker, 2 inches bigger, and stronger. So how's he going to come up against that? It's recognition. So go into areas that when you take that beautiful first touch when he does and he gets half turned and gets a shot off, that's his gift, that's his muscle memory. But if he listens to the coaches, how to get into the scenarios at the right time. If he goes too early, the space gets closed. It goes too late, it's too late. So, you know, when I love bite boys like him, but the boys that you can make a difference to are your Alan Campbells, your Ricky Lamies, Marco Harris, all these boys. They're just like sponges. They love it. And when you see them implement what you've worked on them for 6 weeks on something and it just clicks, oh, best feeling in the world for me.
Jack Ross spoke about that on our... Jack worked with us in the A-licence last year when we were doing the online stuff because of COVID, obviously. And Jack spoke passionately about, similar to you, about the need for coaches to educate themselves better. Because players, I think this is where you're coming to, because players are more likely to say, why, Gaffer? Why?
Love that.
So if the coach is that well educated, so from Jack's experience at Sunderland and now Hibs, obviously, he says players are now more likely to ask why. It's not 10 years ago anymore where, go and do this, all right, Gaffer, I'll go and do that. Why? Wait a minute, Gaffer, why are you asking us to do that? Oh, Jesus, back foot, certainly.
No, love it. See, when you look at these people that go on TED Talks and all that, and they're up on that stage, and somebody asks them a question, they don't get agitated. They lap up because, you know what, they know their subject 3, 4, 5 levels deep. It's the insecure coaches that are not that great that hate to be quizzed. There'll be no great coach that doesn't like to be quizzed because somebody asks you why. Oh yes, give me the mic. This is why. Can you see that? And you talk them through it and you show them that you care about them and you make them better. Brilliant. So if you're asking why and somebody berates you, for me that's not a top coach. It's not even a good coach. That's a poor coach in my opinion. But it does happen, unfortunately.
Yeah. Mo, it's been a pleasure. I'm conscious of. We could keep talking about this, but it's Greg, I guess from your side.
Part two, there's a call for part two. Part two.
A teaser for part two as well, exactly. But any final thoughts from you, Greg, as we wrap up?
No, it's been different from what we normally do, but I like different. We've spoke about a lot of different today, I think. It's refreshing. I think it's a good word. I think you used that word, Lewis. It's refreshing to just get into the nitty-gritty of coaching, what Mo gets from his coaching, how he likes to portray himself as a coach, how he likes to put on practices for players. So, no, fascinating insight, I think, to that. So, no, thanks, Mo.
Oh, thanks for the platform. He's got a job for me.
Well, I tell you what's not a joke. Tell you what's not a joke is the potential for a part two. I think there's scope for more of this at some point. So,
good. There's more meat on the bone. That's good.
Absolutely. No, pleasure, mate. Enjoyed it a lot. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.